This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, Halflings. Jasper here. We have some patrons to thank before we get into this week's episode. So many new patrons. So much thanks to give. Jeremy, how many, which patrons are you thanking? Who you shouting out this week?
Ooh, you know I'm thanking Donovan Panky.
Hell
yeah. I'm thanking Christos Dukakis.
Ooh.
I'm thanking Adam.
Ooh.
I'm thanking Crafty Druid.
That is one crafty druid.
I'm thinking Daisy. If Daisy is the Daisy I think Daisy is, hey Daisy, how's it going? And I'm
but
also
not,
thinking,
still hey.
I'm also thinking Lada Bartova.
Woo-hoo.
Love that. Thank you very much. Inati, do you have some patrons to thank as
yeah,
well?
Yeah, I do have some patrons to thank, actually.
I do.
I'm going to thank... Yeah, I got them patrons. I'm going to thank Marquita Jones.
Ooh.
I'm going to thank Ali Martinez. I'm going to thank Dungeon Mama.
Ooh, Dungeon Mama.
Oh, we love Dungeon Mama.
Dungeon Mama.
I'm going to thank Nancy Art Music. I'm going to thank Private with Little Foxy as their little avatar.
I love the Little Foxies. They're so cute. They're so cute in the Patreon.
Yeah, and I'm going to thank Donovan Caputo.
Yeah.
Very nice. And then I
feel
have
like Nancy Art Music some... should be, because of the periods, should be Nancy Art.
Art.
Music.
Very, very cool. Yeah. And I also have some patrons to thank. I would like to thank Wendy Charles, Ryan Bosshart, Kelsey Campbell,
ooh,
Cassandra,
hell
Joshua
yeah,
Johnson,
ooh,
DJ Ingram.
Ooh.
Damn.
DJ.
Oh, it's not DJ. Yeah. DJ Ingram's better.
Yeah, way better.
Honestly, yeah, I prefer DJ Ingram to DJ Khaled.
Yes. But thank you so much new patrons.
Thank
and I hope
thank
that you enjoy
you so
your
much
time over on thank our you Patreon. If you haven't checked it out before, you should go and check it out. There's loads of really cool stuff on there. Speaking of, we're actually in the middle of thinking about how we can update and refresh and make our Patreon even better. So all of our patrons, including all of those that we've just thanked, it'd be really, really cool to find out what you think of the Patreon and what things we could do better and what maybe things you've seen elsewhere that you would like us to do maybe, and we'll see what we can do because it is we love you guys and it's the way we fund the show, so we thank you so much for your help, and patrons are great. Should we get into this week's episode, guys?
Yeah, I think we should.
I think we definitely should.
Yeah,
we definitely should.
Yeah, we absolutely.
Okay,
I feel strongly about this.
I don't know why. I feel like I've had a lot of milk or something today, and I just feel like I've got like a thing in my throat. And you know, honestly, this is funny. This is a little peek behind the screen if this gets left in. I genuinely have anxiety about the opening now because I feel like it's got ever so slightly bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yes, it has.
And like,
I agree.
And like the note sometimes gets a little high, and like I feel myself kind of being like, I don't
want to,
because I know. I think it's fine, but I know as soon as I do one, hello, you will fucking destroy me. You know what I mean? And I'm so scared. I'm so scared of that moment happening to the point where like I really have to concentrate on it. Because it's not that I can hit it, but I just know if there's a tiniest wobble in that note, I know you will come off. I know you will come after me.
Yeah.
So I always get myself, I have to like psych myself up to do it.
Just try and like rein it in and just go for like a straightforward like good morning Vietnam type deal.
Oh my god!
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragon.
full Prince vibe, woof.
This makes them even more black.
Cake glitches and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon. On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
Yeah! We're about to get into something real big now.
Hello, halflings! It's me, Jasper William Cartwright, and I am joined today by...
Jeremy Cobb, but Chantrell Every calls me Cobbington Von Jamar.
Whoa, Cobbington Von Jamar, holy cow!
It's a strong one.
That's a strong one. That's like a character. You've got to make that a character and play it in a session that we do.
After I play Poochie Ratbag.
After you play Poochie Ratbag, give the people what they want, Jeremy.
Yes.
Hey, halflings, it's just the two of us today. We are going to be chatting, we're going to be chatting later on about playing mental ability scores. How you can play them, different ways you can play them, and how just because you're high charisma doesn't mean you have to be the life and soul of the party, or just because you're super intelligent doesn't mean you have to be book smart. There are loads and loads of different permutations as the way you can play mental stats, but I thought, Jeremy...
Cobbington Von Jamar. So Cobbington.
Cobbington Von Jamar. I thought you've been itching, nay, chomping at the bit to share with us a little tale from the
chomping.
Table. Nice. Thank you. I'm glad. I'm sure people will love that in their ears. Close up. Before we go ahead in this episode, I will just give a little warning to everyone. It is just me and Jeremy this week, which means we will go wild. We just tried to record a mini-sode, and it took us 2 hours. So we will go wildly off-piece, and hopefully eventually Jade will cut together something that resembles a semi-regular episode of Three Black Halflings. But anyway, Jeremy, why don't you give us your tale from the table?
Yes. Okay, so this is continuing on from the game that I've spoken about several times. It is the gothic horror slash noir game that I've been running, of which Unati is a player. Unati was not here for this particular session, or the sessions leading up to it, so I will try and sum up essentially what led them to this point in the story. Without going into much detail, essentially, there's a gothic horror novel that actually predates Dracula, about a female vampire, a lesbian female vampire,
of course,
named Carmilla. It's written by Sheridan Le Fanu. He's also famous for having written Green Tea. That's like his other famous short story that he wrote, which is mainly famous because it has a spectral demon monkey in it. And that's just a great idea.
Demon monkey. That's amazing.
It's fantastic. I intend to incorporate it in a future session at some point in a future story arc. This particular one, Carmilla, is a lesbian vampire. She's incredibly old, but she looks like she's like 18. And her and her guardian go around to various families. She falls in love with a young woman, preys upon her. The woman dies. They move on. She changes her name by essentially just rearranging the letters in her name. And that's it. But her name is Carmilla Karnstein. And she like also goes by Milarka and Mirkala. I think her original name was like Milarka or Mirkala. But both of those are just rearranged Anyway, I had basically had a version of Carmilla show up named Sheridan Karnstein. So Sheridan, the author of the book, and then Karnstein, Carmilla's actual surname. She had been bouncing around the city, and each time she popped up in a new spot, she would change her name. So she used to work at a newspaper where she was known as Erin Deshay, and like her middle name was Strinkern. And then eventually she will fall in love with one of the employees there. And of course begin feeding upon that employee, and then the employee dies and she moves on. But in D&D, when you are killed by a vampire, you don't just stay dead. You become a vampire spawn.
Yeah.
And so when she leaves, she usually like leaves orders for the vampire spawn to just survive. And So, my buddy Ryan, who's a friend of the show, he's guested on the show once.
He has.
His character was hired by Laura, who's Laura's the name of the protagonist from Carmilla. In this version, Laura lost and died, but he was hired by Laura's mother to investigate Laura's death because people thought it was like some disease that she had. But the mom's like, nah, based on the circumstances, I think there's foul play. And this investigation had led him to a point where he's like, it was clear that this Erin Deshay that she was involved with, there was something fishy about her. And there seemed to be a pattern of Erin Deshay having popped up in other places under different names. And so in order to find out more about Erin, they're like, cool, we're going to use the spell Speak with Dead. But in order for that, we need the body. So we need to go to Laura's grave, exhume her, and take her head to a person who can cast Speak with Dead. But rather than get the proper permits, they decided to sneak into the graveyard and pull a whole heist. None of them brought shovels, by the way. So they're digging with their hands. Digging with their hands in a graveyard.
Oh, man. Come on. Bring yes. shovels.
Yes. So they get into the casket, discover there's no one inside, because they're doing this under cover of night. There's no one inside of the casket, but there's a tunnel that's been dug out of the casket. They discovered that it led to like the edge of the graveyard. They followed it all the way to they caught like the scent of like a dead thing, and they followed that scent trail using their Ryan's dog. He has like an awakened dog named Old Boy. Old Boy followed the scent all the way to
what's Old Boy's voice, if you may, Jeremy?
Old Boy has never spoken. Old Boy has not spoken yet.
Even though he's awakened?
Yeah, because he can't talk. He just has like human level intelligence.
Oh, okay.
But he led them all the way to this derelict church. They looked inside the church, discovered what they eventually realized was Laura about to feed on a person inside of this rundown church. They interfered. And here's where we get to the real part of the tale. Ryan's character. So they, through a series of mishaps, had accidentally let her get away, and she had fled into a back garden of this church. And for those of you who have not been to like more like British churches or Gothic churches in general, a lot of them, especially in Britain, have like these extensive gardens or graveyards behind them. And this case is just a garden, but because this place had not been tended to in some time, the garden was super, super overgrown. So there were tons of places for this vampire spawn to hide. Well, Ryan's character has an ability that we homebrewed where he can basically flame on like the human torch.
Very cool.
Had previously done it to get in and out of the church because he can slip through spaces that are like 1 inch wide when he does that.
Sure,
so he slipped in between the wooden boards over the window, accidentally lighting them on fire in the process. And then when the vampire spawn ran into the garden, he followed her, vaulting over the fence and running straight into the trees, still on fire.
Oh, Ryan.
Now, he remained on fire for, I think, a good 2 rounds, still running through this. One of the other players has the spell Control Flames, which is like a cantrip. So she was able to put out
desperately
5 feet.
To put all these fires.
Exactly. But she's like, I can't put, this guy has run like 40 feet through here. I can't just spend this whole time, because this fire is going to keep spreading too. This is going to take me the whole combat. I can only do 5 feet per round. There's so much fire. And Ryan eventually like turned his flames off. But basically over the course of the battle, the vampire spawn realized that they were using Old Boy to track her. So she attacked Old Boy, thinking if she kills Old Boy, they can't track her. Ryan, of course, his character flips out because he's like, that's my best friend, that's my dog you're attacking. So he uses Burning Hands again into a heavily forested area, lighting even more of the area on fire.
Oh my word.
And it was at this point that the bard, Variant Tiefling, who can fly, was like, guys, this fire is getting out of control. Because I have a map. I actually made a map for this one. And for each time, I was rolling to see how much damage the fire was doing to the area and how far it was spreading. And so they were seeing more and more of this map just covered in flames. And she was like, guys, I think we need to get out of here. Because I was starting to add smoke, too. Like, it was getting to where it's like, it's hard to see now. Because there's so much fire. They've been in here for like 7 or 8 rounds. Yeah.
Jeez.
And And eventually Ryan is like, he stays in for a couple more rounds. The druid is like, yeah, you're right. She splits. She runs out of the garden. The tiefling can fly, so she's okay. But Ryan is standing there yelling up at the vampire spawn, like, no matter what it takes, I will find you and hunt you down and kill you. And she hears that and she's like, well, I'm not a fan of that. Mm. And here's where I hatched what I will admit is a very devious strategy. So I've kind of rejiggered the vampires in this game to be a little bit closer to like the gothic versions, like mm-hmm. the mythical versions. So sure. There are very specific ways you can kill them. And fire, while it damages them, does not kill them.
Kill them, yeah.
And she knows this. She regenerates hit points, and it's already been established in this game that vampire spawn can regenerate, in this particular game that we're playing, that vampire spawn can regenerate from having been, like, completely roasted with flames. They did it to, like, a vampire spawn rat.
Did you keep the rule of, like, radiant damage, or did you just say any damage?
Yeah, it had to be, like, if it's radiant damage, then maybe they can't
then
regenerate.
They can't do it the next turn or something.
Right,
but
fire doesn't fit that requirement, and normally it's supposed to be, like, if they're reduced to zero hit points, then they don't regenerate, but I was like, well, in this case. So she's like, cool. Well, if you're going to hunt me down, I don't want that. So she jumps down and grapples him. And here's where we run into issues. I think at this point he started to realize with how much fire there was around them, if she manages to keep him there, he will burn to death and she will just survive and leave. Yeah. And,
oh my God.
And now people are like, oh no. And the fire starts to like surround them. Now, old boy stays behind. He's trying to save his master. He's attacking the vampire spawn, doing everything he can. It's to no avail. The bard, the tiefling, ends up being like, I've seen him die once. I can't let this happen again. Like, I've died before. This is too traumatic. I cannot allow this. I can't just leave him. She dive bombs in, manages to successfully push the vampire spawn off of him. He makes a break for it. Reaches the very edge of the fence. He has 5 feet of movement left. I have made it so that if you approach the fence, it's difficult terrain unless you can hit a DC 10 acrobatics. You know, it's just a regular waist-height stone fence. Nero has his character Nero has a +4 to dex, +6 to acrobatics in total.
Wow.
So he needs to roll a four or higher. And he has an 85% chance of making this roll. He rolls a natural 2. Roll hits an 8. Fails, which means he's now stuck right at the edge of the garden, which is burning behind him. Now, here's where things get really bad. The vampire spawn... Oh, and I should say, before this, while he's standing there, kind of panting, his dog tries to follow him, but old boy has taken too much damage and completely collapses running through the flames and burns to death in the flames.
Oh,
Ryan had... Now, Nero had ditched him in there. When Nero got free, he wasn't like, come on, old boy! He just ran. So it's clear that Nero is in a complete panic and has just left his best friend to die. His best friend does die. He hears the mournful howl from behind him. And this particular variety of vampire spawn is one that I've kind of homebrewed. It's she's not just like a regular vampire. She also drains like mental psychic energy. And so she has abilities from the mind drinker vampire, like weakened. Slightly weakened in terms of damage, but augmented in terms of effect. Because if you fail her save, it's an intelligence save. If you fail this save, you are stunned for a round. Now, she has gotten in, she has to recharge this on a 5 or a 6 every turn. She keeps getting 6s to recharge.
My God.
And this is, everybody has successfully resisted the save this entire battle until now. Nero fails the save, meaning she can just run right out, grab his limp form, and drag him back into the flames. And so Nero, seeing freedom, feels like this piercing pain in his skull. Yeah, on the fence. It's just, and then this little Duergar dwarf vampire spawn comes like scurrying out, grabs him, cackling, just drags him back into the flames. He's like, no! And there was nothing anybody could do by that point. And this is the second time that his character has died in the past 3 in-game weeks.
Ryan, my dude, come on. He's the only PC death I've ever had in my games as well.
In this particular case, as far as I'm concerned, this is his fault more so than it is mine. Because this wouldn't have happened if he hadn't lit the place on fire. The burning hands attack, I get that. That's a character thing. I'm with you on that one.
But saying that wasn't what got him. Flamey form for that many rounds.
That was the dumb one. That was where it's like, bro, really? That was unwise.
No.
And here's the thing with how it's gone. Even he said this with the fact that this was a seriously traumatic incident for Nero. He's like scarred by this because he could get this close. And now it's and then he's just like no. He's being dragged back into the flames. This vampire spawn like. And he's a fire genasi, so his own element is killing him. He resists the damage, so it even takes longer. It's terrible. And this is like a very high magic setting to the point where resurrection is very easily available if you have money. And he comes from a very rich family, so resurrection is pretty much assured. But the problem with that is I still need death to matter. And this has this has helped me come to a kind of a potential solution that I think we will probably end up adopting, which is... the idea of, like, you can die repeatedly and just keep getting brought back, but dying itself is such a horrific, terrible thing that is, the phrase that I've been using is deleterious to your soul. It's just, it's bad for you your essence, at your core. It's like making Horcruxes. It's just bad. It messes you up. Yeah. And so I looked at like the madness mechanics for D&D in the, I think it's in the DM guide. And basically and I talked about this with Ryan because part of this was also his idea. The idea is that he from now on will just straight up like vampires and like vampiric creatures are a trigger for him. And when he encounters stuff like that, he will have to make a wisdom save, time. Not every single turn, but the first time. Or suffer one of the madness effects from a table that, again, we combined a couple of the different the tables that they have there and settled on something that we thought was appropriate. Like, stuff that, he starts wildly attacking the nearest person. He starts gibbering and can't speak. He's just stunned. He passes out. He, starts shaking uncontrollably and gets disadvantage on, dex and stuff like that. Anything to do with strength or dex. But on top of that, there's permanent madness effects that they have in D&D, which are basically just flaws. And the idea is that this dying like this, everybody gets one. One, you're okay. If you keep dying.
Oh, okay.
But if you keep dying, it starts to mess you up. And so we're kind of establishing as a mechanic now, you still want to avoid death because if you die a bunch of times, it just makes you worse.
Yeah, and then it's almost like, it almost becomes like a double-edged sword because you probably get to a point where you're like, I kind of want my character to die now so that I can play like a new character without literally being crazy, like literally just like, I like seeing vampires in like every shadow, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And obviously this isn't something that I would suggest for every game, but if you, look, it's gothic horror and noir. Like, these are two games where, you becoming a worse person and having horrible effects because of the terrible things that you've seen.
Definitely
suits. It's intrinsic to the genre.
Yeah, definitely suits, for sure.
So, and also, the other thing is, just practically, the agency that he works for, which is run by his parents, are just not going to let him continue doing what he's doing. They're just going to send him away. Because it's imagine if you're this rich person, and your son has been working for you for, 2 months, has gone through 3 vehicles, and has died twice in the past 2 weeks. First time beaten to death by zombie acrobats, the second time burned to death by his own flames while a vampire spawn cackles. you're gonna just be like, look, son, something's not working here. You need to go away for a while.
Look, bud. Let's have a chat.
So they're basically gonna send him away to basically train and undergo some therapy to try and help him out. Ryan is going to bring in a temporary replacement character. Because the agency is like, look, we're just going to send somebody else in to do your job.
We're just going to do something else. That's, oh man, that is so funny.
Yeah.
I do actually, when you were saying that, I do actually have a fun tale, which I will tell, maybe not in this episode, maybe in a future episode. Remind me to tell you the origin of the supervillain of my other campaign. Ooh. It was very fun. We got like, we discovered a supervillain like in the campaign, okay, which I hadn't planned for, but yeah, it was very fun. So I'll have to tell you that story
at some point.
Maybe I'll even tell at the end of the episode. I don't know. Depends on how long we end up talking about this for. Probably 2 hours again. So let's go ahead and talk about mental ability scores. I think it's a contentious one. Jeremy, you brought this up in the first place, so you can sort of jump in at any point to talk about, sort of say why you want to talk about this. But I think from my perspective, the thing that gets a little tricky here is it's less binary, I think, than the physical stats. The physical stats are, you know, constitution is your health, your virility, you know, your sturdiness, standing up to challenge. Your dexterity is exactly what it says on the tin. It is like your reflexes, how agile you are, that kind of thing. And then strength is just the, like, literally the amount that you can lift. Do you know what I mean? Do you even lift, bro? And it's pretty simple, but definitely gets a little more dicey when we get into the mental abilities. And I think that we were kind of having this discussion when we were talking about this episode, was that it can be a little bit of a barrier, I think, for some people when they're rolling certain types of characters, and kind of like it kind of becomes a little bit difficult. And also when your class demands that you are very good at one particular thing, I think people can find that very restrictive for a character. So we thought we would have a little discussion today about the different ways that you might want to, the ways that are sort of traditionally you can play these, you know, like a high wisdom character, for instance. And then maybe some different ways, some alternate viewpoints on how you might play a particular ability score, or even just think about a particular ability score, like, because I think it can represent very different, they can represent very different things. I don't know if you had anything you wanted to add to that, anything about this topic that you felt like was particularly...
I think that it's difficult a lot of times because these concepts are somewhat poorly defined, or they're at least difficult to define. So I was going to start by saying how I define wisdom, intelligence, charisma, specifically in a D&D context, based on what they're used for in the game. Who seems to specialize in them. So intelligence, I would define as just knowledge. It is knowledge of the world, like knowledge of the world around you, as in you know facts. You've read a lot of books. You have a lot of information that you can regurgitate. That seems to kind of be how knowledge functions. Like you roll it for history checks or arcana checks, both of which are knowledge about theory or facts. And I believe nature is also intelligence. I think so. Yeah, because it's knowledge about facts of things, I believe. Wisdom, I would say, is understanding the world around you. So being able to like perceive things in the environment, being able to understand people, how to help people with the medicine check, which honestly, in my opinion, medicine should be an intelligence-based skill.
Definitely.
And I believe that investigation should be wisdom-based.
That's very true.
Because it's investigation is basically like the insight version of wisdom.
And I think it's more about your it's more about intuition than I think learning. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that like you need to, on a certain level with investigation, you need to intuit like the layout of a scene and the kind of the, like if you're like, let's just take the most literal version of like you're a detective and you are investigating a crime scene, you need to kind of intuit what might have happened in this scenario. I feel like that's a lot harder to teach. Do you know what I mean? That's not like a, that's not necessarily a learnt thing of like, if a pen is broken at this angle, what could that mean? I don't think you'd go to a book to find out what that could mean. You have to kind of be like, oh, maybe like, actually that looks like it impacted on something. Maybe they use that as a weapon and it's broken in a certain way. And so therefore you're investigating
Yeah, and see, that's, you know? That's where I could also say I understand on some level why it is intelligence, because like Sherlock Holmes with deductive reasoning, where it's like, oh, you have mud on your shoes that is this specific color. I know that that mud only comes from this specific area, so you must have gone there. You have this, like this part of your jacket is worn, therefore, based on statistic information, that it could go either way.
But I guess what I'm saying is, though, that I would say that to like even see the mud and to know that that is something that you need to investigate, do you know what I mean? Like that,
most people rule that as insight.
That's exactly what I mean. That's where it does roll over for me. I think
investigation seems to. I would say this in terms of research. If you're like, I want to research a topic, and they're like, okay, roll an investigation check. That I could see being intelligence. That makes sense as an intelligence thing, because you're engaging with the process of learning. Whereas if it's like, I don't know where my key is, and they're like, okay, roll an investigation. It's like, I don't know. I feel like that is more of an intuition. Where is it like,
it's more
is
of a history check probably. Yeah, actually, like,
where did I last leave it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or I feel like investigation is a hairy one. That one's difficult. So if you look at like, and even understanding it, looking at how, jumping back to intelligence, the classes that primarily run on intelligence are wizards and artificers. Wizards do research. They research all their spells and write them in a book.
Yes.
Artificers are constantly trying to build and understand machines. They're trying. It's all about technical stuff. It's all about mechanics. Oh, if I add this here, what will happen? If I do combine these two things, if I build,
yes,
like that's. I understand why those would be intelligence based.
It's discovering knowledge as well. Like, isn't it?
Yes.
It's about discovering your own knowledge. An unlearned knowledge. Yeah.
Whereas with wisdom, you're looking at druids, so an understanding, a connection to the natural world. Mm-hmm. I understand, like, you understand the environment, you have a connection with it, you're in tune with your intuition, you're in tune with the world around you, or you're a deity if you're a cleric. Also runs on, it's like, okay, so it's the intuition, the divine inspiration. It's not about necessarily, although, I mean, you could argue that, like, biblical scholars and stuff like that, or not just biblical scholars, excuse me, religious scholars in any religion who study.
But if we're taking, feel free to correct me if I'm sort of, but if we're taking that, I would still say that if we're going on a more like classical version of deities, if you haven't got like a demigod or like a high powered fae or something, probably gonna be pretty indirect with instruction,
exactly,
and with belief system and stuff. So it's gonna be more about, you can learn as much as you want about the history, but like you'll never know what a deity wants in that specific moment unless you're able to intuit the meaning behind the breeze. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like a certain breeze or the something you catch out of the corner of your eye, which is more. Especially like, you know, the gods in my mind kind of operate in like a D&D
less direct
setting. Less direct, yeah.
And certainly
unless you cast like a spell, like, you know, a commune or something.
I 100% agree with you. I think that's a really good point. And you can say that in a lot of religions, like certainly in both, I think, the Jewish Bible and like the Christian Old Testament, there's like a number of stories where somebody will get a dream and then they'll go to like their wise men and be like, yo, can someone interpret this dream for
me?
Yes. Yeah. And it's always intuition based. It's never like, well, based on the color of the mud, then it's never. Yeah, I completely agree with you. But then we come to charisma.
Spicy.
Yeah, and I guess I'm kind of mixing them up right now, like just jumping from one to one. But
yeah, well, we're going to go through them separately, but like we're just getting a little overview of some thoughts on these. So
charisma, I would say, is like an ability to affect those around you, whether intentionally or otherwise. So it doesn't necessarily mean you're attractive. It more means that you are an effective, like you're effective at when you show up in a room, people notice you. Or if you don't want them to notice you.
Or you can choose for them to not notice you.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean? Because you know how to negotiate that situation in that that people will not notice you.
Yes.
Because you understand on some level that kind of social structure, like the social construct of conversation.
You just have that ability.
Yeah.
It's like the Marilyn Monroe thing where when she was Norma Jean, when she, like, they were walking around, I forget what interviewer it was, what was walking around with her, and no one was paying any attention to her. And it's because she wasn't Marilyn. Like, she wasn't in character. And she was like, do you want to see her? And he's like, what do you mean? And she just changes the way she walks, changes her posture, puts on the character of Marilyn Monroe, and suddenly everybody's like, and is like immediately drawn to her. That would be like a crazy high charisma score that she could just flip on and off to just attract people.
And like I think that is the nature of charisma, in that you have that kind of flexibility almost. You have the you understand the that. Yeah, I think effect is the right word. I think you've nailed it with effect, because I think that it's better than to say like you just exude this naturally, or I think it is definitely still about your ability to negotiate like such a situation.
Yeah, because you'd be a really scary person and have high charisma.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of like a psychopath or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like
they're the Joker, quite famously has probably really high charisma.
That's what I mean. They're quite famously people that really, really understand the way that people tick. Can understand how to. The Joker is absolutely a perfect example because absolutely understands how to make people follow him. Like it's all about social experiments, and do you know what I mean? Like these kinds of things. It absolutely is. I was just trying to think of, there was an example that I had then of, I can't remember, it'll come back to me. Because we were talking about charisma, weren't we, about the fact that it can often get, I think it's like, people don't view it as like a trainable ability.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I think people almost feel like it's like an innate thing.
They think it just means you're like really hot. Or like you just want to have sex with everybody or something.
Yeah, which I think is a very like reductive way.
No.
Because like I think, so this is I think where it becomes a little thingy, because I think that even like someone like, I don't know, not the Benedict Cumberbatch version, but like there are some instances of like a Sherlock Holmes who you would view as being incredibly socially awkward, still having high charisma. Maybe actually even the Benedict Cumberbatch version, because whilst people might not get along with them, they absolutely get out of the social interaction what they want to get out of the social interaction. Do you see what I mean? Even though they come across as abrasive or rude or whatever else, they're still getting exactly what they need from that conversation. They're getting all of the information that they want. They're getting someone out of the conversation if they want them out of the conversation. Do you know what I mean? Like they understand the machinations of being like, okay, I will show you affection now. And I'm choosing to show you affection. Like even that can still be classed as charisma, have an understanding of that, you know.
Meryl Streep's character in The Devil Wears Prada, another person who's just really mean to everybody, but clearly has very high charisma because everyone is constantly. It's not just because she has power. Something about like she has practical power where she can fire and hire people, but there's an aura that she exudes that causes people to want to try and please her and be terrified of her.
And it's exactly the example you said of almost like turning it on and off, because there was a brilliant example when she walks into the office for the first time and everyone's like almost like bowing to her and trying to get everything sorted and whatever. And then there's, I think later in the film, sorry, spoilers for Devil Wears Prada, I guess. One of my favorite movies. I'm happy to admit it. I absolutely adore that movie. When I think Anne Hathaway like sees her like in her house with like no makeup on, I think she was having an argument, I think, actually. And the difference in her as a character, it's amazing. Like the way Meryl acts it is incredible. Like she's like she almost suddenly feels like this broken and frail person, and you're like, who has just exuded strength for so long. And I think that all of that can be kept under the kind of umbrella of charisma. And I think that you can choose a character, you can choose how your character interacts with their own kind of social ability. Why don't we come to charisma a bit later so we can dig into that a little bit more? So let's flip and go back to intelligence and playing like high or low intelligence characters. Because this is an interesting one for me, because I often think people play it. I don't know if you get this. I kind of get a little frustrated or annoyed when people with low intelligence just play their characters dumb, because often for me, the issue is people don't play low intelligence characters. They play low wisdom characters.
Right.
What they're like, oh, I think I'll do this. And they go in and charge and just clearly do something stupid. Like they're like, it's going to affect the party negatively or something. And I'm like, that's low wisdom, not low intelligence.
Yeah. In terms of how it functions in Dungeons and Dragons. Intelligence is the knowledge, and wisdom is like application of the knowledge.
Yes,
exactly. In some ways.
So And so, I always think that one's kind of like a funny scenario. And I, again, I'm very much talking, yes, like you said, like the mechanical versions of that particular thing. But like, it makes me laugh because I think that's what you're you're attempting to play low intelligence, but actually you're playing low wisdom.
Yeah.
You're playing low wisdom.
Low intelligence would probably just be like, yeah, I don't really know anything. I have a difficult time like learning new facts. I don't really pay attention to all that stuff. That's just not me. Or it's like, you book learning just is not your thing. I think that, go ahead.
Yeah, and I was just saying, because I think that, because this is... This is, I think, that's low, zero intelligence. Me and Jeremy both just
of our
dialed down to two.
Bottomed out.
But, so this is what the interesting thing is. So for me, I've never considered myself, and I do not consider myself to be an intelligent person. I don't think my intelligence score would be very high, but I feel like my wisdom score would be a lot higher because I do. But I do think I do think of myself as an intelligent person, if that makes sense. And if I was to put my ability scores in here, I would not go very high intelligence, but I would go high wisdom, and I would call myself an intelligent person because I do think that when it comes to the application of knowledge, I'm good. And I think that when I'm receiving the information orally, and it's about me remembering and kind of processing what information means in like the real, in like a real world context, like that's where that's how I root my information, right? Like if I was to sit down and read from a book, I wouldn't retain the information because I'd struggle to understand how that applies in a real world setting. Whereas if you were to explain the same thing to me and kind of give me that kind of, which you often do when you're explaining, like, oh, how does that work in the real world? Or how does that machinate inside in something tangible that I can touch or see or feel or hear or whatever, that I feel like I'm very good at picking up. You know, and I think partly that is, you know, like I struggle with dyslexia and things like that. And so I've just always been a bit terrified of the idea of like book learning, you know?
Styles of intelligence. It's different forms of intelligence.
So what I'm saying is I think that that should kind of be like an option for you when going into thinking about intelligence, because I think that. I wouldn't be able to play myself in this game. Do you know what I mean? Because I think that I would do good history checks.
Yes.
Because I can remember and I can retain information very well.
What if instead of intelligence, we called it knowledge? Because what you're saying really gets at an interesting point.
But I don't know, because I would still say I still retain knowledge very well.
Well, it's more about volume.
But I would still say that I have relatively, like, in terms of, like, topics and things that I know about.
So you would probably have pretty decent intelligence then. You might have good knowledge, but your wisdom would be higher.
Yeah, sure. But what I'm saying is, I guess I'm trying to, like, say to people that it doesn't have to, the bookish sort of outlook on it shouldn't be a parameter for you to not then pick intelligence as something, if that's the kind of character you wanted to play. Like, especially if we're talking about a character, if you wanted to have elements of yourself, your character, and you're not like a bookish person or not an intelligent, because like, I would feel like we, for instance, are a good example of in-game like high wisdom and then high intelligence, because I feel like you pick information up and recall information incredibly well. You know what I mean? I kind of cut you off. You were going
to
something.
Makes sense. I think intelligence is one of the hardest of these to play, because you can only in terms of actual playing something, you can really only play, considering that you are creating the character yourself and making up everything that they say and do, you can't technically play somebody who's smarter than you. Except unless you're willing to be like, okay, can I try and figure this out based on it, and can I roll a check? And I think that's where you could argue that 5e is limited in its application of intelligence as an ability, because it's only really tied to ability to recall things. It's not really there's not like a deduction skill that you could have. And I think that does make it perhaps more daunting, but honestly, I think most people are intelligent enough, like the vast majority of people,
yes,
are intelligent,
yeah,
enough to be able to play a high intelligence character. That doesn't,
yeah,
mean
absolutely,
that you need to, that doesn't mean that you need to constantly be, you yourself need to know a ton of facts. But mm, look, you could, if you really wanted to, talk to your DM and be like, yo, can I just like make stuff up? And it's,
yeah,
true, and it's something that I got from like a book. And I, yep, recall this information, and it, as far as I'm aware, it's true, and I have good intelligence, so I can be, like, spouting off, like, well, oh, yes, in fact.
In the fourth era of this particular thing, they actually had a curved sword that, you know, like,
yeah,
you could absolutely just make that stuff up.
Exactly.
Yeah, 100%.
And if you work with the DM can make it so that, like, you get to come in and be like, can I roll a history check? And you have such good history that the DM will just straight give you the information, which, I mean, is,
yeah,
is a very regular part of D&D. But it's like...
Or even just give you information prior to a game. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you like, if it's, because I think that that's, that would be like, that for me would be like a really fun way of rewarding a high intelligence player,
mm,
by sort of going like if I had a wizard in my party, I've never actually DM'd for a wizard. Weird. You know, I could be like, hey, this is a bunch of stuff that you would know leading into this next session. Kind of like you would if you were like visiting a player's hometown or whatever,
mm-hmm,
you'd give them like a little lowdown on like,
yeah,
the hometown so that they can kind of be the ones to walk around and show people around and, you know, introduce them to NPCs and all that kind of stuff. I feel,
mm-hmm,
like you could absolutely do the same with a, just copy and paste some notes from your notes and give it to your,
yeah,
give it to your high intelligence player so that they can command that space. Because I think actually if I... now that I kind of know that's an option, having just discussed it with you, I would be way more willing to play a wizard or to play a high intelligence character,
yeah,
on the basis of that, because before I absolutely would have been like, yeah, it kind of freaks me out. Also because I always feel like playing high wisdom or high intelligence means you can't make rash decisions. Well, I think that's what a lot of people, do you know what I mean? That's a lot,
yes,
of, like, that's what we put on it. Do you know what,
yeah,
I mean?
Which is really not true. There's plenty of extremely impulsive, very smart people.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective, unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Yes, and especially like if we're, again, taking the very core version of D&D and how they describe these things, high intelligence kind of means probably going to be infinitely more chaotic than, like, you know what I mean? Like, high intelligence probably would be, for me, would be like, because they're the ones that are going to be like, yeah, I see the binary choice here, and this is something that I believe will work. I'll do it. And you're like, whoa.
Like,
they, you know,
like,
then
really
they blow
emotionally
up the lab.
Detached.
You know what I mean? They blow up the lab or whatever.
Yeah.
Because they're just like, yeah, this will work. I trust my own intelligence completely.
Yeah. Like Elon Musk doing one. Some craziness where.
Yeah.
Like deliberate, yeah, just out there.
Naming
stuff.
Your child XYZ 2517. Hey, look, do you know what? If that's that's fine, but that kid's gonna have a nightmare in school.
Yeah,
and that's the way I always go. I look at these things. I feel bad for the kid because I'm like X2E something. Like the teacher's gonna look at it.
MC squared.
Yeah, it's like you might as well just call them equals MC squared. Do you know what I mean?
I was gonna say another thing that you can do with intelligence. You as a DM to kind of highlight characters with high intelligence is if there's like some strange event that occurs. If you have, it might be worth, because we have passive wisdom scores. I think it'd be worth having kind of passive intelligence scores, like passive history. Calculated in much the same way. And if it's like something that you think that this character would probably know based on their areas of knowledge, or if it's just if whatever DC would be less than their passive, you can just tell them like some craziness happens. It's like, say like something bursts into flames, right? Unexpectedly. And they're trying to figure out where did the fire come from? It could be like, you know that there are certain conditions under which fire can exist, and these are some of the conditions. So now the person has a basis from which the party can help. It's like, yes, I could give this to the party, and we can try and narrow down from this list, because that is knowledge you might have.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you could even if it doesn't feel like super broad or like difficult, you could even then break down into you could pick like an area of expertise. Do you know what I mean? Like, I might say to like someone, if they've got above like, I think like a 14 or higher in intelligence, I'd say, right, what's like what is an area of expertise that you have? Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then if anything comes up, I will use your passive intelligence to sort of just like tell you stuff. And you don't like, you can choose to roll to try and get higher, but I will just tell you innately. Yeah. And then I kind of feel like it gets around that thing of like, because I often feel this is a drawback I find when playing an intelligent character is like, I would know this though. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just would know this, and I've got a roll for it, and now I might just roll badly, and that feels that feels super annoying.
It makes you look like an idiot, too. It makes your character look like
It's actually one thing that I've really appreciated. I don't know if I mentioned this in this episode or on the thing we did earlier. All the episodes are blending into one today. but we mentioned the fact we both played Pathfinder recently, and that's one thing I actually do quite like about the Pathfinder system is that you train in stuff and you can become like an expert from like level one, so it's like really limits the likelihood of you actually failing at something that you are trained at,
right?
And things like unreliable talent you can effectively take as like a feat to mean in like certain areas to mean that you'll never fail a check in that particular way, because I completely agree. I do think past like level two, I feel like level two, you could still arguably say they're like kind of like a normal human's ability. Do you know what I mean? Like if we were
like
to take
exceptional,
that's what I mean. Like if you were to take like the most trained swordsman, you know what I mean? You could say maybe that's a level two fighter. Do you know what I mean? So I feel like, but like, and even that person, there would be certain things that level two fighter would never fail at. That swordsman would never fail at. Do you know what I mean? Like, an archer. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, exactly. Like an archer. Like at a certain point, from a certain distance, that archer is never going to miss.
You can literally
so
just
how
close
the
your
hell
eyes and
get
stuff.
Could a level 10 ranger miss? You know what I mean? Like, it just wouldn't happen. Obviously, I understand it has to happen sort of mechanically for, you know, certain things, but I do think that there could be more concession made on that front to allow some of these allows some of these things to feel more distinctive and more impactful. Like, I find that, like, I don't really tend to take ability score improvements that much anymore because I find their impact to be much more minimal than like feats. Whereas if it was to be like a bar where of like, if I got a 16 on intelligence, I basically got reliable talent on history checks. I would definitely, or like, you know, I could pick one of my things
that
and
would be cool.
Instead of expertise, I would take like like reliable talent. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it would be like, there's just no way.
For like
Sherlock Holmes.
Skill,
Sherlock Holmes is not going to fail an investigation check.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He might not get everything.
Right.
But like fundamentally,
he's
going to get a bunch of stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like more than the barbarian who wanders in and gets a nat 20. Like, because that would just be, it's ridiculous.
That's also like, why you mentioned something. That's why I'm not as big of a fan of like nat 20 is auto success and beats everything else.
Yeah.
And nat 1 is auto failure and beats it like automatically, like except in battle.
Again, actually, you know, this is actually, I was thinking about this. I kind of actually wanted to do this when I first started DMing. The plus 10 rule, I think, is actually much better. Mm. I know it's like less exciting when you roll an at, like, than when you roll an at 20, but I think 9 times out of 10, an at 20 is still going to be a critical success.
Yeah, but the idea of just being an auto crit. I think an at 20 should be an auto crit, but it's also like 10 above.
That's what I'm saying. It's also 10 above. Or like, you can still, like, just the only reason I say that is, again, if we take this instance where we have a barbarian and we have a Sherlock Holmes, if they're both rolling investigation, they both roll nat 20s, Sherlock Holmes will see more than the barbarian.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying? Like, yeah. So like,
and honestly, even I feel like
there is a big difference between, like, because the barbarian might get like a 19 and in that scenario, and the Sherlock Holmes might get like a 31.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Yes. So like, I still feel like there should be some qualitative difference between but what they
here's
discover.
Here's what I would argue. Even in a case where the barbarian rolls a nat 20 and Sherlock Holmes rolls like a natural 15, but gets like a plus 10 or 15 and still rolls functionally, numerically, a higher score, I think he should still beat the barbarian, which is in the rules of D&D. That is how it works, because there's just some cases where somebody's just that good. I don't care how much of a nat 20 I roll, LeBron James is a better basketball player than me. It's just how it works. So even if he rolls like a 3 on jumping and I roll a nat 20, and
he's still getting over you, dude.
Yeah, he's still gonna touch higher than me. It doesn't make sense. Like, you can play
you
that
go
way,
full
sure.
Space Jam and just your arm.
Yeah, I shatter both of my legs from jumping so hard. It's like My Hero Academia. I launch myself into the air. My legs explode from the sheer force of the
That's
launch.
Funny. I think this is inspiring me to like maybe make a. Some rules that we can put out or something. I really like the idea of getting like a version of an unreliable talent in a skill.
Unreliable talent.
That was, well, maybe you could have unreliable talent. Maybe you have like below an 8 or something. You're just bad at this thing. Like you just everything is treated as a 10 or lower.
Somebody curses you to have unreliable talent.
You're like that weak that you literally just cannot, you can't succeed a strength.
You have to roll a certain number or you auto fail.
You auto fail, yeah.
Or you are below a certain number, you subtract your modifier.
Yeah. but I quite like that, though. I quite like the idea of you kind of, because I also think that it allows more distinction, which I think sometimes gets a little, that's where I think the annoyance for me comes in between the barbarian and the Sherlock Holmes rolling two investigation checks. I just don't, there's no point. It kind of just feels like we're just doing numbers at that point. We're just doing luck. You know what I mean? Because like, oh, Sherlock Holmes has failed, so every other party member is now going to succeed, and the chances are someone's going to pass, and I hate it. Or I'm just going to keep rolling until I succeed in this thing. And I'm just like I understand the mechanics let you do that, but I don't feel like that's how that should be how it works.
Yeah. I think we're never going to settle on a perfect system.
But I think you could adapt to this, something, you know,
yeah,
there's
for
certain
your own
things
game,
you could add
to that.
There's, yeah.
You might like it. You might prefer that nat 20s are auto successes. Like if that's your thing, I think that is an absolutely rule you can add in, but I'm cool with the idea of being like, okay. Cause I think when we first started in your campaign, you had actually said that it was like, when,
if you get 10 over the armor class,
well, not even just that, but even group checks. Cause you were like, I don't like everybody trying to roll perception. Why are we all rolling perception? And I get where, like, the group is like, we don't want to all stick our fortunes with that person. But here's the interesting thing. If you actually do use passive perception, that actually makes a bit more sense. Because say the DC for this perception check is 15, and you have a person in your party whose passive perception is 16. It is a waste of time to have, in my opinion, if you choose to respect the passive perception, this person should just see it. Yeah. They should just see it.
100%.
And honestly, you can have that for a lot of different scores. Passive deception. Like, if the DC for this lie is below this person's passive deception, this person is already really just, like, good at deceiving people. If their passive deception For instance, my character, Dwayne Fabulosa, when I guest starred on No Small Roles, essentially, mm-hmm. his passive deception and persuasion were 20.
Yeah.
I believe. They were 20.
Yeah.
If the DC for whatever I'm trying to do is not a 20 or higher, I shouldn't have to roll. People should just believe me.
Same
thing with history. If I'm not, say I'm like an expert in animal husbandry or whatever, if we're using your expert rule, or even just in general, you just know a lot. Your character has really high history, and your character's passive history, if we're doing 8 plus the modifier, is like, let's say it's a, what is it? It's 16. Their passive history is 16. And it's like, it's a DC 14 check. Why are we having them roll? It's a waste of time. I think I'm saying is with group checks, I've kind of gone on for a while, but in the case of group checks, if the DC is higher than the highest passive person's, the highest person's passive, excuse me, the highest passive score had by one of the players, then you should probably just have that person roll.
Yes. Yeah. I completely agree. And and I've seen some people as well go with the idea that you you can't. So say I rolled a perception check, failed, because it was kind of like for the group. Only a person who's then proficient in perception check can roll again, which I'm like, that's also another version that kind of could work. Hmm. So the idea being that, like, the only way to double up is if you are proficient or you have expertise in that certain thing. So it stops everyone from just, you know, spamming rolls, basically.
Yeah.
I quite like that. I think and I think then it makes a nice distinction as well between the kind of physical and mental stats, because you then, I think there was the physical stuff, it's different because I think you have you have external factors that come into it. Like, there's still obviously you are very unlikely to fail at something if you are that good, but there is at least still, like, you know, something could break, something could, you could get distracted, you know, exactly. So I think that there are certain elements, and I think, I don't know if I'd employ this with all things or all checks or something, but like, I definitely feel like, I kind of scale it up dependent on difficulty and dependent on, like, the moment. So, like, if you're just trying to get into a city and you want to deceive the guard, I would absolutely use, like, now I think about it, 100% I just use, like, a passive deception.
Yeah.
Like, if this is some mastermind rogue, whatever, coming in with, like, some elaborate disguise, they've got a seal from whatever, there's just no way this guard's gonna buy, like, not gonna buy it. Like,
if anything, the guard should have to roll to see if he is able to
That's what I'm saying.
With disadvantage potentially depending on the disguise and all that stuff.
But I think even at that point I kind of go, I'm not gonna make anyone roll for this, because there's just no way. Do you know what I mean? There's just no conceivable way. Obviously, if there is a way, if that guard is actually, like, you know, has worked for 30 years.
The guard is Sherlock Holmes.
Or is Sherlock Holmes, but, like, has an incredible amount of experience or whatever, and you know, has been trained to spot a lie, would feel a bit, like, convenient, I think, if I was a player on that. I'd be like, well, okay, they just happen to be an expert, sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'd be like, okay, I'll let that happen. I'll let them, you know, have a roll off.
Yeah, I think kind of like an example that just came to mind is in Inglourious Basterds, when the Brad Pitt and the Bastards are trying to infiltrate the movie premiere.
Is that one, the three? Is that what you're talking about the movie premiere. Yeah.
When they're trying to infiltrate the movie premiere, and they're able to successfully, like, you have Bridget von Hammersmark giving them the help action with their deception, and they are just casually beating everybody, except for Hans Landa, whose passive insight is probably off the charts.
As soon as he
sees her, sees the whole thing, is like, well, that's interesting. Now, he doesn't immediately realize what's up until he actually walks over and hears them speaking.
Hears them speaking and what is, like, not an Italian accent.
Immediately figures it out. I don't know if that dude needed to roll. I think they were desperately trying to roll deception checks.
And they were failing horrendously.
But it's I think what it comes down to, and like none of what I'm saying is hard and fast in terms of like different rule application. I don't think either of us are trying to be like, you should do it this way.
Yes,
it
must be done this way.
I think it's helpful to look at wisdom as understanding the world around you, and intelligence as knowledge and things, and charisma as ability to affect people. I think that actually helps in terms of, I think that makes more sense in terms of like, instead of saying charisma, you're hot. There's plenty of very ugly characters in fiction, for instance, who have very... Ursula, you could argue, has pretty high charisma.
Yeah.
Well, Ursula's not really ugly. I think a lot of people would be into Ursula.
Yeah, but it's not even, like, I don't even think it's like, it absolutely has nothing to do with appearance.
No.
Like, charisma has absolutely nothing to do with appearance. I think you can be, like an ugly person. You can be like a mean spirited, nasty person. I think probably what is frustrating about the fact that people perceive charisma to be hot, the hot score, is the fact that out of all of the stats, that's the one I think that where you could have people with maxed out charisma and be vastly different people.
Yeah.
Like, vastly, vastly different people. Like, other than, like, the other ones where I feel like, you know, if you are maxed out at strength, you've probably dedicated a lot of time in your life to, like, weightlifting. And do you know what I mean? Like, there's a path you have to go on in order to attain maximum strength.
Yeah, in most cases.
Do you know what I mean? Unless you, of course, are just, like, from a species or, you know, you're like a Superman who they're just inherently born with max strength. Do you know what I mean? Which, again, in a D&D context, wouldn't happen almost certainly because we don't do ability scores and stuff like that. But, like, there's so many people that I can think of that would be max charisma and would be vastly, vastly different people. Vastly different people.
A lot of politicians would have very high charisma.
Yeah,
and a
extremely
lot of them are,
high charisma.
In fact, I would argue that both Donald Trump and Barack Obama would have very high charisma. Very different people in a lot of different ways, in a lot of different, very different levels of attractiveness as well.
Dexterity.
Demeanors. Like, vastly different people.
Vastly different
but both
people.
Both extremely effective at what they're trying to do.
It's actually quite funny. Mike, Jade always tells me, she's like, oh, you make friends with everyone, like, really quickly. Like, how do you kind of do that? I was like, that's a really weird question because it's absolutely not something that I affect. Do you know what I mean? I do not ever go into a situation being like, I'm going to make you my friend. Like, because I'm not in the habit of, like, collecting people. Do you know what I mean?
You will be mine. I will make you my friend.
You know, I very much, like, just... I personally am very interested in people. Like, and I think that is a valid way of playing high charisma. Do you know what I mean? Like, I am just, like, excited by people and by social interaction and negotiating social interaction, and it's something that I think about a lot. Do you know what I mean? So I think that's a way of playing. I would say almost, like, there are elements of my high charisma score which are a flaw. You know? Like, in the sense that I'm so aware of social situations, I get very anxious about offending people. I get twisted in knots about the idea of coming across as rude, or, do you know what I mean, saying the wrong thing in a certain situation, and, you know, like, things like that. And so I would almost say, like, there's so much involved, I think, within charisma, almost to the point where I feel like I almost feel like there needs to be like a slight
a
separating or a subcategory or something, just because it feels a lot, you know, to encapsulate.
I have two things
within,
to say on that topic in response to what you just said. The first thing is, for those of you who haven't played, including you, Jasper, the game Disco Elysium, they have now released the full version, so you can get it, I think, for all, even non-PC consoles now, which is awesome. But that's an RPG, a dialogue-based RPG, and in that game, if your abilities get too good, they start to mess you up. So if you're too smart, you start to like become like filled. Basically the game starts to push you in negative directions. And if you're like too good, if your charisma score is too high, it starts to like encourage you to manipulate people. Because you're so good. It's like you have that ability, you know, might as well. I want this person to go over here. I'm going to just get him to go over there. And like, but it's not. And then there's one where it's like, you start to just straight up have a break with reality because like you have, I think it's either like your intelligence or like your connection to the world around you. But you like, basically it's extremes in any area mess you up, which is part of the game, which I really enjoy.
I love that.
But the other thing, definitely play Disco Elysium. It's great. Mm. But the other thing is one area that we haven't touched on, which I think could open up a whole other area of conversation. There are a lot of characters that should be good at certain things, but are not. Specifically, this is one example. Dogs should have really high charisma, but beasts in general have very low charisma.
Low charisma, sure.
But bears, for instance, dogs, and quite a few PCs who are, say, very strong or very scary should be extremely good at, say, intimidation. Barbarians should be good at intimidation, but a lot of them, you know, for them, intelligence might be a dump stat or charisma might be a dump stat. If you have like an 8 charisma, but you can break, you can bend metal bars, I feel like that should be scary.
It's almost like you should have the ability to switch certain to substitute, skills.
Exactly, to substitute.
And like make it a strength-based thing, because this is something I noticed in Pathfinder. You can do a thing where you can use different, what was it that there was an example that there was it was that you could, instead of using, it was like basically like instead of using like dexterity, you could use strength for a thing. Which again, I kind of feel like it makes sense, right? Because if you're doing
in some cases,
there are certain things where you go, for that, if you're a barbarian, you're not going to intimidate someone with like, words.
Yeah, you're
gonna punch a hole in the wall and say that'll be your head in a second. Like, do you know
that's
what I mean? That would intimidate the hell out of me.
More intimidating in many cases than just somebody talking to you.
Yeah,
unless the person is incredibly good at talking, it's usually.
And I don't think that requires a whole lot of like social knowledge or how to. Do you know what I mean? I don't think you have to be some sort of a social butterfly to figure out if I crush something in front of them with my large hands that is going to intimidate someone.
Or if say you're in a halfling kingdom and you have a minotaur with you, his passive intimidation. Should
it's
be off
be
the chart. This say in my game, in the old game that I used to play, there was a 6'8", 350-pound Minotaur in a kingdom of halflings. Yeah. I don't care. Like, unless you guys are trained knights,
battalion. If you are civilians, in any way,
this
you are scared.
This dude's passive intimidation should have been insane, and he did eventually get good charisma. But like at first, his charisma was like a 10. Which doesn't, I agree with you. I think this is something that I would encourage people to play with, is being able to substitute different ability scores in place for specific skills.
Maybe even propose it in a case by case basis.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So like maybe in a particular instance, you could say, you could say, I'm going to punch a hole in the wall and scream as loud as I can. Mm-hmm. Can I use my strength stat instead to my intimidation? Because otherwise you kind of get into a thing of like, I do something with my strength, say like I roll an athletics check to punch a hole in a wall, which then gives me advantage on my intimidation check. I feel like that's the way that like the mechanics would have you do it.
Just
roll one dice.
Just let them use the strength. And look, that can have consequences in and of itself. If you're punching holes in walls in a, say, a place, an establishment you don't own, now you are potentially getting into conflict with the owner, or you're getting a 100%. Negative reputation around the town. Like, there's a lot of different things that can that can happen there.
There definitely is. I think I'm just trying to think if there's anything that we should kind of use to close this out, because I'm aware this is going to be another very long episode otherwise. But I think that my kind of overall thoughts on playing these mental stats is that I don't think you need to feel like they should never feel like they box you in. I feel like if anything, heightening these mental stats should feel like a liberating experience for you, where you kind of go like, I have more tools in my box to help me work through problems.
Yes.
Because ultimately, mental stats are like more they're a problem solver, not an action. Do you know what I mean? You're like, you know, action upon your mental stats. You solve problems with them, and you have just more tools to do so. So like, for anyone who's intimidated by the prospect of playing a high, any of these, to be honest, because I think if you're anyone who is, if you're not like we are, like an actor, or, you know, you're not someone who is, you know, you don't consider yourself to be very intelligent. You are, by the way.
Very wise.
Or very wise, yeah. That shouldn't feel like a gate for you to then not be able to play that kind of character, not to play a badass wizard or something like that, because I think that there is options available to you and different ways of playing these stats that would make it a lot more accessible. And I think I would just encourage that. Plus, also, I've now figured it out, Jeremy. I've figured out the mechanical thing that I want to make.
Okay.
So allow you to go above 20... And when you go above 20, you get almost like a feat, and you get like a flaw as well.
Okay.
So like strength, you could go like a 22.
Yeah.
You get like the feat of like, I don't know, charger. So like if anything's made of like less than, like if there's anything weaker than wood, you can like run through a wall or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But you can't scratch your head because you're like,
you're too
traps are too big.
Or something like that. Or you accidentally hurt people.
Yeah, or you take a penalty to dex or something, because you're literally getting to a point where you're like, as a in your humanoid form, unless you can find a way to like elongate yourself, you know what I mean? Then you just physically aren't meant to be that strong. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
That's what I'm thinking. And then again, like you kind of said, like, Disco Elysium, you know, if you went above 20 on intelligence, like the world starts to become a little bit too like binary for you.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
You turn into a purple man.
You lose, like, you start to lose concept of morality, and maybe, I don't know, you lose the ability to like do non-lethal damage or something. I don't know. Yeah. Like, I mean, there could be something,
you should talk about with the players.
Yeah. But that's my thing. I'm going to come up with some options for people, because I really like that idea, and I like the idea of being able to go past 20, because I feel make a broken character.
Once you get to a certain level,
you shouldn't be able to get. I think maybe like from 10 upwards, I feel like you could start.
I don't know. I'll go 15. I think
15. You reckon? I think you could easily have maxed on certain things. I feel like
by
10, I'll meet you in the middle.
Things, yeah.
Let's say 13.
Okay.
Let's say 30.
Yeah, that's where the fighter gets their third attack. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I feel like that would be fun. And then maybe that would encourage me to take ability score improvements over feats again.
Yeah.
I would propose an incentive for me to go, ooh, if I can get two more points in this, I unlock this. And then you get to play flaws. I think there should be more mechanical flaws as well introduced to D&D.
I get why they don't do it for all players, like they don't have it in the rules as explicit.
Yeah,
things.
But I feel like it should be
suggested options.
Yeah, but I feel like it should be something. And again, like, you know, I'm a big exponent of D&D Beyond purely on the basis of that, how much more accessible it makes the game for me.
Mm-hmm.
As again, someone who struggles with things like dyslexia and whatever, who the idea of like writing all this stuff down on like a character sheet or like trying to track my different abilities really overwhelms me. And I know that I wouldn't be able to do it. Whereas D&D Beyond, I can hit the feats tab and I know that I think I've got a feat. I hit the feats tab. There it is. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's very, very easy for me to negotiate. Yeah, so I feel like that's why I kind of like, I always like, I'm a big exponent of trying to like get things that are like tangible, like that you can like roll, or that it's there for you, because I think it's about accessibility. And I think that, you know, it's a lot of stuff we talk about here. Like it's all well and good. It's something I've been thinking about a lot recently. And it's my new tagline. There is no point in diversity if you don't have inclusion, and I include that for accessibility. Like if you don't, there's no point in having diverse people making things and doing things if it's not accessible for those people that it's meant for. Do you know what I mean? Like you need to be able to. So like the inclusion part for me is like the language that you use and the way that that thing is presented and that kind of thing. It's all well and good saying like, hey, we have an Africa-based setting, but if people from Africa still feel like that's the wrong language is being used or the wrong, do you know what I mean? It's not inclusive.
Yeah.
Therefore it's pointless. So that diversity tick doesn't tick. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not, you haven't completed
maybe
it.
Maybe sensitivity. Maybe that would be it. Diversity with sensitivity.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So
I agree with what you're saying. I think there's a lot of really cool ideas in there. I guess for my final summation,
what's your closing statement?
Yeah, I would say, I think hopefully the basic understanding that we've given in this episode, because a lot of what we've talked about are like hypotheticals, different ways to apply them, different ways to interpret them. I think if you have a base understanding of what these represent in game, then you can play around with them. And I think the part, it's an intrinsic, there are people who complain that certain mechanics are not built into D&D, and I understand that to a degree, that they're like, why are they encouraging players to build this stuff? But that's also a part of the game, is that they're trying to encourage you to create things specifically for your table. And so I think...
And to not limit that as well.
Yes.
Because if they make it, then DMs can then easily turn around and go, well, you know,
yeah,
because there's
in
this,
the rules.
Which... Yeah, and that's annoying.
Yeah.
So, sorry, Carol.
And so what I would say is have conversations with your players. DMs have this conversation with your players. Players have this conversation with your DM. I think not even like what we're talking about in terms of applying different abilities to help you with specific checks. You could just as easily say, okay, I want to roll my intelligence, my knowledge of mountain climbing to try and apply my theory to help me climb this wall. And maybe like it who was it? Really, really famous mathematician. Was it Euclid? I can't remember who said, give me a lever long enough and a place to set it and I will move the world. Like essentially like that's an application of knowledge where like, oh yeah, if I have the proper leverage here, I can lift this.
Sure.
And so that would be like an application of intelligence to help you. What I'm essentially encouraging is have conversations and be flexible in these areas and don't feel like you have to rigidly interpret it as just charisma is always just you are a hot person who wins people over. Intelligence is just you're a brainiac who spends all their time reading and researching and is basically your stereotypical nerd. Wisdom is like you're one with all, you're a monk who just sits alone and like meditates all day. Like these can all have different applications. You could argue that like, for instance, Dragon Ball Z is an example. Goku has very low intelligence in some areas, but really high intelligence when it comes to a fight. And also really high wisdom when it comes to a fight.
Oh yeah.
Like
his tactical intelligence is through the roof.
Exactly. Captain America would be another example, actually, of somebody who has incredible tactical knowledge and is not dumb, but like in terms of just asking him about science questions, it's like, I don't know.
I was in ice for 70 years. I don't
exactly.
have a clue what's going on right now.
Exactly. So I think that there's all I'm encouraging is be flexible with how you apply this stuff because it'll only make your game more fun if you guys are willing, if everybody's in on it, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I think there's many a situational thing which it makes it very easy to imply that, like if you have Captain America in your squad and they want to roll some sort of history check or something to do with like tactics or even a persuasion check maybe, do you know what I mean, like on like planning out a battle strategy or something, they should probably be able to add their proficiency modifier because they would absolutely be proficient in it as like a minimum, do you know what I mean, or advantage or something. Because they just would know that stuff.
Insight
like,
would definitely affect your persuasion. Well, potentially. Doesn't have to, but it could. Your ability to understand people could definitely affect your ability to convince them to do things for you. That would be an example.
Yes.
As well.
Yes, 100%. 100%. Well, we have chatted for ages. Thank you very much for joining, I guess, two Black Halflings today. I hope that you've enjoyed it nevertheless.
This is like the repeat of the pilot.
Good version of the pilot. Yay!
Yeah.
Well, I will find that pilot recording one day, and like I said, it's gonna be like a £10,000 Patreon goal. Speaking of, you can find our Patreon, patreon.com/TB Halflings. You can follow us on the Twitters, Instagrams, and Facebooks at TB Halflings. And please do not forget, if you have liked this episode or any of our previous episodes, feel free to drop us a rating and a review because it really helps people find the show. Thank you very much. Have a great day, you brilliant, intelligent person.
Yes.
Your intelligence, you are intelligent because you're listening to the show.
And also,
you have a high intelligence.
Intelligence is more than just knowing stuff in real life. Mm. It's just more than just knowing. Look up theories look up theories of multiple intelligences. It's very interesting stuff.
There we go.
Yeah.
And on that very smart, intelligent point, we will see you very soon. So long, Shire folk. Booyah!
Yeah!
That was a HeadGum Podcast.